and he gives him the land promise. He goes to between Bethel and Ai, which isn't far from Shechem, and there he gives him the land and the nation promise again. And that gets us to today's lesson. So any questions or comments about that quick overview? Okay. So what's the context? Context, the main characters in the story today in chapters 13 through 17 are going to be Abram, Sarah, Hagar, Ishmael. And, of course, God is the main character in all of this. When? During the patriarchal period. At the beginning of the story, Abram is between 75 and 85 years old. I think he was probably closer to 85 because we know when he left Haran, he was 75. And he's already gone through Israel, gone down into Egypt, and come back up. And so he's probably pretty close to 85 if he isn't 85. And by the end of the story, by the time we get into chapter 17, he's 99 years old. So there's a 14-year period that we talk about in chapters 15 through 17. But really, we're going to be talking a lot about from Haran, where he was 75, to 99, so about a 24-year period there. He's in Hebron, toward those trees. I know this one's got to be hard to see. But maybe you can see the little red dot there in the middle of the map. And that's where Hebron is. If you were to go up north and just a little bit east, you'll see Jerusalem. And if you go directly east, you see the Dead Sea there. And of course, directly west is the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, what are we going to cover today? God restates or reiterates the nation and the land promises twice. Once in chapter 15 and once in chapter 17. In chapter 16, we'll discuss or talk about Ishmael's birth. And in chapter 17, and really a little bit in chapter 15, we'll talk about the covenant that God has with Abraham. In chapter 15, Abram has a couple of questions. It starts off with God appearing to Abram. God appears to Abram a couple of times here in 15 and in 17. And they seem to me like different ways that he appears to him. In chapter 15, God shows up and he says, "Don't be afraid. I am your shield and your exceedingly great reward." I want to talk about that a little bit more later. There's a lot of details I hope that we get to at the end of the lesson. But at the first, I really want to get through just the main story. But he says, "I'm your shield, your exceedingly great reward." Sometimes we sing a song, "The Lifter of My Head," that reminds me of this. Abram has a couple of questions like I talked about. When God shows up, Abram asks him, you know, if Abram is 85, for 10 years, God has been telling him, "You're going to be a great nation. You're going to have all these descendants." And Abram says, "Who are all these descendants going to come through? I don't have any children. There's this guy named Eliezer who is from Damascus. He was born in my house. He's not my descendant, but he was born there. Is he going to be my heir?" And God says, "No, you're going to have your own descendants. You're going to father your own children." He doesn't mention Sarah necessarily as being the mother of these children at this point, but he mentions that, "Abraham, you're going to have your own children. They will be your heirs. They will be the heirs of the covenant." And he takes Abram outside and he says, "Look up at the stars, and if you can count the stars, then you can know how many children you're going to have." And then we get this beautiful, beautiful verse that says, "And he, Abraham, believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness." Abraham is such a great example of faith. And we read about him throughout the Old Testament. We read about him throughout the New Testament. And this one verse where it talks about it was accounted to him for righteousness. We can see it in the New Testament at least three times in Romans and in Galatians and James. Again, pointing out this great faith that Abraham had. So, God answers that question to say, Eliezer isn't going to be the one to inherit it. You're going to have your own son. And then God says to, I brought you here out of Ur to inherit this land. Now, I think this is the first time that we see that God actually is the one who brought him out of Ur. If you remember in Genesis chapter 11, if you go back there, it says that Terah brought up Abram and Sarah and Lot and their family, and they went up into Haran. It doesn't mention at that point that God was the one who told them to leave, but apparently it was. God says, I brought you out of Ur to get you up into Haran and to bring you here then so that you can inherit this land. We've already seen what great faith that Abram has to believe the seed promise. And I have no doubt that he believes God when he tells him about the land promise. But he asks God, how will I know that I'm going to inherit this land? How will I know that I'm going to inherit this land? We get into, this is just a slide to show the stars, you know, indicating the number of descendants that Abram was going to have. God starts answering Abram's question about how am I going to know that I'm going to inherit the land. He tells him, you go get a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a pigeon. He was very specific about the animals that he wanted. The kind of animals and how old that they were. I don't think it would have been good for Abram to have gotten a 2-year-old heifer or a 1-year-old goat. No, they had to be 3 years old. So he goes and gets those, and he prepares those for an offering. And he separates, he divides in two the larger animals, but leaves the birds in whole. And he separates those pieces. And it's getting toward dark. And he falls into a deep sleep, it says. And there was a horror and a great darkness that came over him. Have you ever fell asleep before and then just got real scared about something? I don't know if that was exactly what happened to Abram or not, but it's what it reminded me of. But then God goes into telling Abram what's going to happen in the long term, at least for us a long term, for the next 400 years or so, for his descendants. He says, your descendants are going to go into a land where they are a stranger, and they are going to be very much mistreated. There will be strangers there. There will be slaves there. And at the end of that time, I'm going to judge that nation, and descendants are going to come up with a bunch of wealth. And I think this is the first time that we're told that the Israelites are going to go down into Egypt and be slaves there. He says in the fourth generation, they'll come back up into Canaan. So he tells him all this about what's going to go on for quite some period of time with his descendants. And then a smoking oven and a burning torch passed through those pieces of the animals that Abram had prepared as God had told him to. And he says, this is the covenant I'm going to make with you. You're going to inherit all the land from the river of Egypt up to the Euphrates, a large piece of land, the land that he was living within at that time. And you're going to overcome all these nations that live there now. I think it was about 10 different nations. I say all the land of the Ites, because nine, at least of those 10 nations, their name ended with an Ite, such as the Hivite, the Girgashite, the Hittite, etc. The Rephaim were the other of the 10th. They're going to overcome them. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about them in a little bit. Any questions or comments about this? Brent? I agree. I don't think he's doubting God. I don't think Abram is doubting God at all. He's interested, but I don't think he's doubting God. Good comment. Anything else? Okay. That's chapter 15. Chapter 16, we studied the story of Ishmael and how he is born. Okay, for at least 10 years now, God has been telling Abram, you're going to have a lot of descendants. But they don't have the first child yet. And so Sarah comes to Abram and says, you know how God has withheld children from me. Go in to Hagar, my maid, and we'll have children through her. This was Sarah's plan. From all that we can see, this was not God's plan. It doesn't seem like he's involved in this at all. Seemingly, this was their plan to try to help God. Abram goes along with this plan. Hagar goes in to Abram. She becomes pregnant, and she despises Sarah at this point. And I looked up the definitions for it, and three definitions there, and they're all about the same, but particularly the second one, to dislike intensely or to loathe. I think that probably gets the idea that we have toward Hagar, Hagar has toward Sarah at this point. Who would have thought that this was going to work out bad? Where you had these two different ladies with the same husband. Hagar is expecting through Abram now, but she is still Sarah's maid. She's not on the level with Sarah. She despises Sarah. And Sarah blames Abram, and she goes to him and says, my wrong be upon you. I let her go into you, and she's now expecting, she despises me. You fix it. And Abram says, indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. Now, when we get to when Ishmael is 14 years old and they leave the house, we see a different attitude from Abram. But at this point, Abram says, you do to Hagar as you please. And Sarah dealt harshly with her. And just like us, Hagar didn't like it very well. And so she runs away, and she is on the way to Shur. Shur is kind of in between Israel and Egypt. Remember, the wilderness of Shur was the place where the children of Israel, when they come up out of the Red Sea, when they were leaving Egypt in Exodus, they come up in the wilderness of Shur. So it's kind of in between Israel and Egypt. She's on her way there. Hagar is an Egyptian. So it seems to indicate that she was going from Hebron and she was headed back toward Egypt. She stops at a spring or a well there. And an angel of the Lord comes to Hagar and says, Hagar, where are you from? Where are you going? And she says, I am fleeing from my mistress Sarah. So she's not hiding anything. But the angel says to her, you return to Sarah and you submit to her. That's going to be hard, right? It was hard before, and now she's left and run away. To go back is going to be hard. But the angel says, you are with child, you're going to bear a son. His name is going to be Ishmael, and he's going to be a great nation. So he makes a promise to Hagar about what the descendants are going to be like. And Ishmael would dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Okay, questions or comments about that? Yes, sir. And I meant to bring that up. Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, sir. Thank you. And if you couldn't hear the comments, they both along the same line there, where it doesn't look like early on that Abram was told that the child of promise was going to come through Sarah. It mentions that it would be his own son, that he would be the father, but it doesn't say necessarily up until this point, until we get into chapter 17, that Sarah is going to be the mother. And so it may be that they are trying to help God by saying, you can have a child through my maid, he will be your son. And so we can see that that doesn't necessarily work out the way that they expect it to. There was a couple of things in this chapter that stood out to me. In Genesis 16 and verse 11, when the angel is talking to Hagar, he says to her, "You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction." So mine in the margin says that Ishmael literally means God hears. And then later on, as Hagar is thinking about all that's happened to her and the things that the angel has said to her, she says, then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees." For she said, "Have I also here seen him who sees me?" So God sees. The name at the well in that place was called Beer Laharoi, which I probably just butchered completely the name of it. But I think it's supposed to mean, you know, well of him who sees. So a couple of characteristics of God brought out in this story of Ishmael. God hears, God sees. Okay, so Hagar does return. Ishmael is born. Abram is 86 years old when Ishmael is born. Okay, and that's just showing the red dot there is where the wilderness of Shur is. The body of water at the top would be the Mediterranean. The landmass to the left would be the land of Egypt to the west. And then to the right, if you were to go up the coast, would be Israel. And then the body of water at the bottom is the Red Sea. Okay, chapter 17, the covenant. He ended 15 by talking about the covenant that he was going to have with Abraham and the land that they were going to have and all those ites that they were going to, all those nations they were going to overcome when they took the land over. But now in chapter 17, 99 years old. So that means Ishmael is 13 years old, right? 13 years of having this son in your house. Loving him, watching him grow. He is your son if you're Abraham. And we see in later chapters how much Ishmael means to Abraham. And I think that plays some into this as we read through this story. Again, God shows up and talks to Abraham. And he says, "I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless, and I will make my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly." Now, did God change his voice between chapter 15 and chapter 17, the way that he appeared to Abraham? I don't know, but we see a different reaction from Abraham, because Abraham falls on his feet, on his face before God. Maybe that's something that we ought to take into consideration too when we're in worship before Almighty God. Anyways, God goes into detail about the covenant that he's going to have with Abraham. And part of that is he changes his name to Abraham, from Abram to Abraham, because he was going to be the father of many nations. Many nations. And the covenant that he was going to have with Abraham was going to be the same covenant that he was going to have with Abraham's descendants. You know, from those of us who have gone through the Waldron's material before, "I will be their God, they will be my people." That's pretty much the covenant, right? He was going to be Abraham's God. He was going to be the God of Abraham's descendants. Abraham was going to be one of his people. Abraham's descendants were going to be his people. God restates the nation and the land promise, and he goes into a little bit of detail about the covenant on the side of Abraham and what they were to fulfill as far as circumcision is concerned. They were supposed to be on the eighth day. It was supposed to be to all their children, to all the people that were born in their house. He goes into several details about circumcision and their part to play in the covenant. And obviously the covenant was, "I am God, you do what I tell you to, and one of the things that I tell you to do is this circumcision." Sarah, her name was going to be Sarai to Sarah, because she was going to be the mother of many nations. Again, at this point, Abram's 99, Sarah is probably about 89. They're older, not expecting to have children at this point of their own, and yet God is saying, this is what's going to happen. And not only that, Sarah, just as we brought it before, hasn't been mentioned that you are going to have the son, but Sarah, now you're going to have a son. You're going to name him Isaac. And the covenant that God has with Abraham is going to go through Isaac. And then Abraham brings up, I wish you would consider Ishmael. God says, no, the covenant is going to go through Isaac. Again, Ishmael is 13 years old at this point. He's lived with Abraham for all I know, all of his life. And Abraham loves him. And so you would see why Abram would want something good to happen to him. And God says, I hear you concerning Ishmael, and I will multiply him exceedingly. He will have 12 princes to come from him, and he will be a great nation. In chapter 25 of Genesis, we see, well, this is fulfilled where those 12 princes are listed from Ishmael's descendants. And one of the things you see about Abraham is when God tells him to do something, he just goes right ahead and does it. We'll see this later when he's told to offer up Isaac. He doesn't put it off. He goes right ahead and does it. God said, you circumcise all the males in your household. That's what God, that was Abraham does. The same day, Abraham and Isaac are circumcised, and all the males in Abraham's house. Okay, questions or comments about that? So what have we covered today? We started off with God appearing to Abraham and telling him about the land and the nation promise again. We are told about how his descendants will go down into Egypt and that they'll come back up and they'll inherit the land from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates. And it talks about all these different nations that they'll overcome. In chapter 16, we see where Ishmael is born into the family. And in chapter 17, we see that God gave a lot more details about the covenant that he was going to have with Abraham. These are some of the applications that came to my mind as I went through these chapters. And there is so much in these chapters, but one of the things is God keeps his promises on his own timetable. In 2 Peter 3 and verse 8, he says, but beloved, do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. From the time we know that Abraham was 75 years old, up until chapter 17 today, where he's 99 years old, 24 years, God has been promising, you're going to have it be a great nation. Probably wasn't as fast as Abraham thought it was going to happen. But God does accomplish that. God doesn't need our help to keep his promises. Sometimes people think, you know, God probably didn't think about this 2,000 years ago when Jesus was on the earth, that things would be like they are today. So I need to do something that he didn't think about. No. God's thought about everything. And he doesn't need my help. I need his help. I need to follow what he's told me to do, and then the promises will come. And then thirdly, I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward. In Psalms 3 and verse 3, it says, but you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. We mentioned a while ago that we sing a song that is fashioned after this verse. I think sometimes when I think of heaven, I think of the beauty of heaven and just getting away from earth and the trials that come with living a life here. But no, God is the glory of heaven. God is our glory. He is the one we should be looking forward to seeing as he is. I can't wait for that day, and I know you can't either. God is our glory. Let's look forward to that. Any questions, comments, additions to that? Okay, I want to go into detail about, I've already covered that. Don't have time for that. Don't have time for that. I do want to cover this real quick if I can. This just really stood out to me, and I hope it interests you as much as it did to me. Remember back in Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, Noah gets drunk, and he's in his tent, and he's naked. And Ham goes in there, and he goes back out, and he tells Shem and Japheth about it. Noah wakes up later, he sees what's going on, and he curses Ham's son, Canaan. He would be Noah's grandson. He says, then he, Noah said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, he shall be to his brethren. And he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. So he's cursed Canaan. He's going to be Shem's servant. And in the next verse, he even says he's going to be Japheth's servant. Well, who are Canaan's descendants? In chapter 10, when you go through all those different genealogies, I think Brent covered that several weeks ago. In Genesis 10 and verses 15 through 18, we begin to see some of the descendants of Canaan. And these are the people who are going to be cursed. It says that Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, Arkite, all these different ites. And if you'll notice, I've bolded some of those because some of those are the same ones in Genesis chapter 15 that God told Abram, you're going to run these nations, you're going to run them out of the land that I'm going to give to you. In Genesis 15, 18 through 21, some of those ites that he lists there are the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and the Jebusites. Again, those that are highlighted, we know are directly lineaged from Canaan. So it seems like God is beginning to put in place how that curse that Noah had on Canaanites is going to come to pass. Well, if we go into Deuteronomy chapter 7, let me read the first couple of verses there. Moses tells to the children of Israel, when God brings you into the land which you go to possess and cast out many nations, in fact, he's going to list seven, and amongst them are the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Again, ones we've already listed. Hittites are the descendants of Heth, which was a son of Canaan. Joshua, when they are about to take over the land, says, you'll know that God is among you when he drives out all these Canaanites, Hittites. Again, these same sets of ites that we read about earlier. We know that this all happens. In 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 26, it says, Solomon reigned over all the kings from the river to the land of the Philistines, as far as the border of Egypt. So he gets all that land that God promised him in Genesis chapter 15. But I didn't put this together until I read this week in Nehemiah chapter 9. Maybe you have read this before, but this fits so well with what we read in Genesis chapter 15. Nehemiah chapter 9, there are several people talking together there, and they say, you are the Lord God who chose Abram and brought him out of Ur of the Chaldeans, and gave him the name Abram. You found his heart faithful before you, and made a covenant with him to give the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, and the Girgashites. To give it to his descendants, you have performed your words, for you are righteous. So even after they came back from the being in captivity, they realized that God had performed his promises to run out those nations out of the land. And Paul recognized that too when he was in a synagogue in the Antioch of Pisidia. And he was talking to the people there. He says, and when he had destroyed seven nations, those seven nights that we read about earlier, in the land of Canaan, distributed the land to them by allotment. Covered a lot today. I appreciate y'all's patience and your contributions. Thank you.